In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Yeah, it's time to talk movies. We do it every Monday at this time. Alan Adams of The Main Edge joins us for Pass the Popcorn, brought to you by Bangor Drive-In and Bangor Mall Cinema 10. Hello, Alan.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Doing very well, thank you. Happy Monday. How was your weekend?
I had a glorious 4th. Didn't go anywhere or really do anything, but isn't that really what it should be about?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's the best kind right there. I know you're out and about a little bit, though, being you were at a distance, and I didn't want to yell out the window, but I did see you and Sheridan and Stella out on a little jaunt this morning.
Oh yeah, we're always out strolling around doing that sort of thing. The big news is I got my first haircut in God knows how long, right on my front porch. My lovely bride Sheridan did the deed, and it actually came out quite nicely.
That's nice that you say that, because Abby cut mine 2 or 3 weeks ago and it did an outstanding job. I was very pleased.
Yeah, no, it's one of those things, Greg, because I had given her a trim a couple of weeks back, so you know, return the favor. You know, there's some anxiety that goes into it, but I tried my best to sort of assuage and just let her know it's like, you know, look, I'm a dude, so I own several hats and a pair of clippers, so there's no damage that's so bad that we can't fix it. So.
Now, was this just trimming it back so you look less like the Unabomber, or did you go radical and cut it right down short?
Oh, no, it's more trim than a full-on cut, although, like, I mean, my hair hadn't been that long since, God, my sophomore year of college, first sophomore year of college. That was a long time ago. So, it was nice to, I don't know, my head feels lighter. Like, she did a really good job. I'm feeling good about it.
Excellent. What else you got going on?
Living the dream. You know, waiting for. As you know, but maybe other folks aren't aware. Tomorrow will mark 8 years of wedded bliss for my wife and myself.
That's right. Well, and also it might also be a big birthday tomorrow too.
It's true. That is true. And so we're making plans. I'm not gonna go out to let the paparazzi coming out. But there's a chance we may actually go somewhere else for dinner.
Whoa!
To celebrate.
You guys getting bold here? Wow, good for you.
Yeah. A place that we feel very confident about. Across the board. It's one of those celebratory things, and then from there we're off to camp for a couple of days.
That's awesome, and the paper's back too, which is exciting.
Yeah, you know, it was strange. It was strange getting back on that sort of horse, but it was nice to sort of drive around downtown and just seeing it in the boxes. The empty edge boxes had sort of been bumming me out a little bit, if I'm going to be honest about it. You know, just a sort of reminder of. Just one of many reminders of how different things are. So it was really nice to sort of see it out there and, kind of feel like we're getting back into the swing of things. And again, no new edition this week. Like we're staying biweekly for July. So our next one will be next Wednesday, where our cover story as of right now, the plan is we'll be talking to Tim Cotton and talking about his new book, which is coming out.
Excellent. So are you going to come back to Wednesdays with us in 2 weeks?
Once we settle in, I think maybe starting next week, I think maybe we could do that if that was something that you would want to do. I'd be happy to kind of get back.
We've had the light on for you for low these many months.
Well, don't I know it.
All right, let's talk movies. What did you get to see this weekend?
Well, I saw a couple, one of which doesn't necessarily merit a ton of discussion. The other, I happen to know you also watched, so we'll probably spend a fair amount of time on that one.
All right, because I've been talking about nothing else for 3 days.
but we'll start with a movie called Desperados, not to be confused with the 1969 Western The Desperado starring Jack Palance. No, this is a new Netflix romantic comedy, because stop me if you heard this one, Rich. Netflix has a new romantic comedy out this past weekend. It stars Nassim Pedrad of SNL fame. It's basically a product of the ever-growing Netflix algorithm that I assume is going to achieve sentience any day now, because that's sort of the year that we're having. It's a very basic sort of like checklist sort of movie. Quirky female protagonist, some unreasonably supportive friends. Ridiculous and easily avoided mistake is made. There's an exotic getaway setting, questionable decision making, injuries played for laughs. Like the whole, there's literally nothing in this movie that you haven't seen before. The basic gist is Pedrad plays a woman named Wesley, struggling. She's adrift. She's struggling to find a job because she has a tendency to overshare, which undermines her interviews. Said oversharing is also causing a number of issues in her dating life, so she's very single. Her friends, named Brooke and Kaylee, played by Anna Camp and Sarah Burns, respectively, are the sort of typically unwavering, supportive friends, shunting aside their own very real concerns in order to help their lunatic friend. She has a blind date that goes wrong with a guy named Sean, played by Lamorne Morris from New Girl and other television shows. She runs away, winds up falling down and hitting her head, and gets helped by a guy named Jared, played by Robbie Amell, this handsome, charming dude who seems to really like her when she's all woozy and concussed. So she decides that's what she needs to do, is be that person and bury her own true personality, which works for a while. They wind up dating and whatever. But when he doesn't call her back for a few days, she goes full scorched earth, gets drunk, writes a horrible email, and sends it off to him. And, of course, in true rom-com fashion, as soon as she hits send, the phone immediately rings. Turns out, Jared, in a hospital in Mexico, he was in a car accident and has been incommunicado for several days. And there are a number of normal person solutions to this kind of thing, but this is a Netflix rom-com, Rich. And so she and her friends get on a plane and go to Mexico to break into his hotel room, steal his devices, delete the offending email before he can see it. That goes about as well as you would expect. There's a lot of hijinks and stuff, but I don't need to go into that. You know everything you need to know about this movie, including that you don't need to see it.
Okay, well, thank you, and appreciate you, as always, for running interference for us.
No, I'm glad to do it, and, there are times when I feel like I am truly doing the Lord's work, and this is one.
All right, so much for that. On to the one that most of the world was watching over the weekend.
Yeah, we're gonna spend a few minutes talking about Hamilton. I hope that's okay with your listeners, because I got some stuff to say, honestly. Someone who's fairly connected to the theater world, you as well. Like, it's like I've known about Hamilton for years. And 5 years ago, it was literally everywhere, and it was one of those sort of zeitgeisty sort of, it's like a generational piece of musical theater. Like, there's like every generation has the one that resonates deeply with the young people of the moment. I look back at something like in the 70s, like something like a Jesus Christ Superstar or a Hair, like those sorts of shows. In the 90s, when I was sort of making my formative, Rent was the big one. And for the young people of particular generation, I think Hamilton falls into that sort of category of just all-encompassing, really inspirational kinds of shows. And so I was obviously going to watch this. I don't know where you come down on this, Rich, but I have a hunch that you're probably in agreement with me. Watching, as a rule, watching filmed theatrical performances sucks.
Oh, yeah. Like, we were talking about that earlier, that it's like watching home movies, because you sort of have to have that wide shot, and so you lose any of the intimacy that live theater provides.
Right. And it's like, and it's the energy that comes with being in the room. You know, like that's it's a vital part of what makes theater, theatrical productions successful. And so I was very skeptical about how all this was going to work. And then the early reviews started trickling in and everyone's like, it's great, it's great, it's great. And I'm like, okay, but like, is it? And then I watch it and it turns out, yeah, it is. Like they did a wonderful job. It was the combination of two performances back in 2016 with the original cast, the original stage director, Thomas Kale. And, you know, this was supposed to be a theatrical release, but like everything else, it's been shunted to the streaming services. But, I really thought it was a remarkable thing to watch, not least because, and this was a big thing for me, and it was something that really helped it resonate for me. They didn't try to hide from the artifice of live theater. Like they embraced it. Like they didn't try to make it a movie.
Right.
And you can't do that with something like this, especially something that's so stylized and sort of kinetic. Like turning this, like trying to film this like a conventional movie was just, it just would have been bad. And instead they really lean into that sort of theatricality of it. You know, and they were able to find the various sort of close-ups and the medium shots and the wide shots, and they really managed to capture the overall feel of the experience in a way that I don't think I've ever really seen in a sort of filmed performance like this. Like even the like stuff like National Theater Live, like it still like it never quite reaches the level that we saw with this show. But yeah, I was genuinely surprised by how great this was. And I don't mean that as a slight to the show, like the awards and the accolades and all that stuff make it pretty clear what a quality experience it is. But the fact that this was they were able to be so visceral in bringing this show to the screen was just really like it was just impressive. Like leaving aside the fact that there are, I don't know, 8-10 like legitimately powerhouse performances in this show. Like I've never seen anything like it. Like
no, I was telling somebody today that it was arguably the most powerful theatrical experience I've ever had, and I was watching it in my living room.
Yeah, and you're sitting on your couch. Like yeah. Just. But I mean, I think it speaks volumes to the talent of the performers, and obviously to the talents of Lin-Manuel Miranda, who you know it's pretty stunning to think about the fact that this dude like I was talking to Sheridan about this, like how tough a sell must this show have been at literally every step? Like the idea of I'm gonna basically use this doorstop of an Alexander Hamilton biography as the inspiration for a hip-hop musical about the Founding Fathers. Oh, and by the way, all of the Founding Fathers are going to be played by people of color.
Yeah, that's an easy sell.
Right? Can you just imagine, like, being the, like, and there are people, you know there are people out there who said no to this.
Right.
And they have to live with that. But, you know, it's just, I mean, obviously Miranda is wildly talented, and we get to see him sort of inhabit this role. But again, like I wasn't super familiar. Like I'd heard a couple of the songs, like some of the really popular ones, like the Alexander Hamilton I'd heard, and My Shot was one that was everywhere for a while. But I don't think I realized like how many bangers this show has.
Oh, it's all of them. Oh man, and everybody's so good. The Schuyler sisters just blew the doors off the place. The guy who played Hercules, and then James Madison, and David Diggs, every time he comes on stage, you're like, I can't take my eyes off this guy. He's such a presence.
Well, and that's the thing. And it's like, this is clearly, it's so obviously a star-making turn for him. Like, because he's gone on, he's made a number of movies. Like, he's starring on the TV adaptation of Snowpiercer right now. Like, he's legitimately, like, a working Hollywood actor now. But it's just like, you just watch, like, and just like the air, like, you know, and like he's, you know, his work as Lafayette is great, But when he like just prances onto that stage at the top of Act Two as Thomas Jefferson, you're like, holy crap, this guy's a superstar.
Oh, God. Yeah. And we were talking about Jonathan Groff, who played King George III. Just amazing.
I'd seen quoted lines from that first song, but I'd never heard it before, and I was just like it just slayed me. And it was a brilliant performance from him. Like, he's such a talented guy. He's also, by the way, responsible for maybe the best song I heard in a movie last year, which was "Lost in the Woods" from Frozen 2, which is an outstanding song in and of itself. But yeah, like all these people, and Leslie Odom Jr. playing Aaron Burr, and that's another thing that I wasn't as aware of. Like, I knew Burr obviously had to have an outsized presence in the show, but like I didn't realize how widely the shadow of that character was cast over everything. Like, even when he wasn't on stage, he was there.
Well, and you realize it's his show, that he's the guy who comes on to set up every chapter of Hamilton's life.
Yeah, he's sort of our, it's something like the stage manager in our town, kind of thing, where he's sort of like, he's really the conductor, sort of steering the show as we go. And of course, like you mentioned, the Schuyler sisters, both of those ladies are just amazing. Phyllipa Sue. Like, how have I never heard of this person before? Because she was just, as Eliza, she's remarkable. And Renee Goldsberry, who I was aware of, again, is fantastic. And Chris Jackson is Washington.
Yeah.
You mentioned, what's his name? Ana Oadun, the guy who played Hercules Mulligan and James Madison. His bars and his in that bar scene at the top of Act One, like I'm like, oh, it's like it was like he was like DMX, like I mean he's just like spitting, and it's just like, oh my God, these guys, like again, like there are ways for stagey like musical hip hop to go very very awry, where you kind of fall into that, because the reality is like. A hip hop song isn't that much different from like a Sondheim like patter song, really. Like there's a lot of similarities there, but and there were moments where it's like it sort of feels the rap stuff does feel a little more musical theatery, but then like stuff like the cabinet meetings
right.
Where it's just like they're just like going at each other, and it's just like, oh, okay, so these guys do have, they have flow, like these guys could spit, and it's just so fascinating to watch. That being said, there are some beautiful traditional musical theater type songs in this show as well. I don't think I realized how many of them there were, but stuff like, oh God, like you're sitting there and it's like, and all of a sudden, Phyllipa Sue is singing "It's Quiet Uptown," and it's like, oh, okay, I'm gonna cry for a minute now.
Oh yeah, big time. And then the finale, and it's no spoiler. We know what happened to Alexander Hamilton, but even knowing that, I don't know how you could be prepared for the finale of that show.
Yeah, and then this is something that when I see a show live, like this is always very important to me. And so watching it here, it was also something that registered the ensemble. In this show, the work that they were doing, like playing multiple characters and just creating this wonderful space through their work, including the woman, and I wish I could remember her name. I can't remember it off the top of my head. The woman who basically played like the bullet.
We were just talking about that earlier this afternoon. What a key figure she is, because she does so much foreshadowing that, frankly, I had to watch twice to be aware of.
You know, and just like across the board, like just this wonder, this glorious sort of gilded machine that is just firing on all cylinders, like watching, like, and you catch bits of like the set moving and the double revolve, which was always so fascinating. And one of the most striking moments of the entire thing for me was that first shot we get from behind the actors,
yes,
like, sort of buried in the set and like looking out, and it's just like, oh, so this is not just a filmed play, like this is something different. You can call it a concert film if you want to, or what, but it's just, it's so much more than I think I was ready for, both in terms of content, in terms of performance, and in terms of the execution of making something so in the moment translate to the screen. Like, I'm just, it's like, I'm still blown away by the fact that they were able to make it work, even, you know, days after having first seen it. Like, just a remarkable piece of work, and I think people are very lucky that they're going to get a chance to see it in their homes.
Yeah.
Like, it's a chance to bring real you know, and frankly important theater to people who would otherwise never have the opportunity to see it.
And of course, it is live theater, and so mistakes happen. And I heard a wonderful podcast over the weekend. They got the cast back together to tell stories, and there were a lot of stories about things that went wrong. And one of my favorite stories was, I think it was Anthony Ramos, who played a couple of different characters, who went up on a line in a song. And Lin-Manuel Miranda says he threw the sound guys under the bus. He started mouthing the lyrics. And so backstage they thought, oh, yeah, it's a sound, it's a microphone issue. No, he had forgotten his lines, but he kept moving his lips so people wouldn't know he'd gone up.
See, and that's a pro. That's a pro right there.
Yeah, baby. No. I love that.
But yeah, and it's like, and you know, those folks had already been doing that show, like, you know, eight nights a week for what? Eight shows a week for a year longer?
I think so, because most of them had been in the off-Broadway cast before it moved to the Richard Rodgers.
Right. And so, you know, and so to already be that deep into it and to still be able to bring that sort of boldness, that sort of fresh energy, like, just, you know, it's just a reminder of how incredibly talented these performers are, and what a loss it is that so many of them are going to have to wait until at least 2021 to get back to doing what they do.
Absolutely. It was an awesome experience. Hey, Al, we appreciate it as always. Thanks to you for being with us and talking movies this afternoon, and in advance we wish you happy anniversary and a happy birthday to Sheridan tomorrow.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
And we'll check in with you again next Monday.
Sounds good.
It's Alan Adams talking movies. Pass the popcorn on Downtown.